It's here! Well, here we are, and welcome back again. Hope you enjoyed the Halloween special last week. That was fun to do. We move on to another week for Stoney Richards Live from the Center, a week that brought us new World Series champs. It almost seems like ancient history now. It seems so long ago. Terrible plane crash in the Middle East, which is very suspicious. A staged suicide in the suburbs of Chicago. What a bizarre story that is. And speaking of bizarre stories, Dr. Ben Carson writes about his past in his book, but isn't interested in exploring it, that kind of exploding all over in the last few days. The Republicans dropped their demands on the media, and Donald Trump hosts Saturday Night Live. What more could anyone ask for? It's Stoney Richards Live from the Center. The podcast here, also available on iTunes. Your comments are welcome at stoneyrichards.com and on Twitter at Stoney Richards. So let's get right to the news at hand. And we may as well start right here. This report, Nobel Prize-winning scientists Angus Deaton and Anne Case have come out with shocking conclusions that white middle-aged Americans are the only first-world group of people dying faster than their counterparts in any other developed country. I think they're talking about us. According to them, this is due to an out-of-control alcohol and drug habit, as well as suicide and depression. They are talking about us, aren't they? Researchers have described this as an epidemic that threatens the fabric of the future of America. The research by economists Deaton and Anne Case, published in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences, follows another paper of theirs from 1999, where questions were raised regarding the relationship between income and mortality. You can't have them both. Well, for a while you can. The worrying trend has been developing since 1998, when mortality rates for 45 to 54-year-old Americans suddenly jumped. Worryingly, the exact reasons remain unclear. Experts could only determine a correlation with a rise in the availability of prescription drugs, such as painkillers, as well as a marked shift toward heroin use. On top of this, there was a steady economic deterioration of the last 20 years, Deaton suggests, and this on the heels of the marijuana issue in Ohio being voted down. But nonetheless, since that year, which was, well, in 1998, some half a million Americans were killed by HIV/AIDS. Only HIV/AIDS in contemporary times has done anything like what the authors described for the other contributing factors, the report said. Addictions are hard to treat, and pain is hard to control. So those currently in midlife may be a lost generation whose future is less bright than those who preceded them. How you feeling? This is fun, isn't it? Increased availability of opioid prescription drugs, chronic pain, for which opioids are described, and I just like saying opioids, and hey, I'll have the opioids, and the economic crisis which began, look at the opioids, aren't they pretty? This began in 2008, may all have contributed to an increase in overdoses, suicide, and increased liver disease associated with alcohol abuse. What is strange is the sudden shift. In the decade from 1978 to 1998, well, that's not exactly a decade, is it? That's like two decades. Mortality rates were dropping, much like in any well-developed Western nation. But at the tail end of that period, mortality began rising by 0.5% every year. For those with a high school degree or less, deaths caused by drug and alcohol poisoning rose fourfold. Suicides rose by 81%, and deaths caused by liver disease and cirrhosis rose by 50%, according to Deaton and Case. In some sort of nightmarish fashion, organ damage was combined with rising depression, inability to relate to others, and various other forms of pain, bringing with them often an inability to work. The authors have even found a strict rising correlation between the number of people reporting mental illness and the number reporting they had difficulty in socializing with others. Why don't you talk to me? Despite popular speculation, obesity, which was also on the rise, was not viewed as a prime contributor to the trend. Aha! There is a bright spot in this story. One correlation, however, was obvious among middle-aged white people. Those with the lowest levels of education have been dying out at a quicker pace. All-cause mortality rose by 22% for this least educated group. Those with some college education saw little change in overall death rates, and those with a bachelor's degree or higher actually saw death rates decline. Okay? I'm going back to school. The broad conclusion here is that the government should really change its attitude to prescription drug policy, but that alone would be a fraction of the story, as social and economic factors undoubtedly feed into the compounded effect. Deaton and Case continue their research, say that their research represents the most comprehensive and thorough study of the aforementioned relationships and how these relationships, are you still with me? Contribute to mortality among Americans. To arrive at their conclusion, the authors used data from the CDC, individual death records, and a slew of national surveys on population and mortality. I need a drink. Time, once again, my friends, for the weekly letter from home, because no matter how far you roam, there's simply no place like home. Well, it was a week here in western Pennsylvania of what we call Indian summer, if that ever existed, and why we call it that, I'll never know. But it was summer once again, and it was kind of a kick in the pants we need to get things squared away for when the north winds blow, which could be any day, though it doesn't seem like it now. The leaves have reached their peak of color, the lawns have been raked and raked and raked. They pick leaves up now with giant vacuum cleaners or with mechanical claws on recycle trucks, but I can't help thinking about growing up when we raked the leaves down to the street and then set them on fire. It was the only way my parents could get me to pull the big rake across the lawn without too much protest, saying I could burn them at the curb. That was usually a call to my buddies that there would be a bonfire as soon as it got dark. We like to think of ourselves as true 12-year-old outdoorsmen and would cheer as we got the burning started with just a single wooden match. The smell was intoxicating and the mood was as tribal as sitting living got for us. The thick, heavy smoke rising into the autumn sky, and every once in a while, a rock thrown in the middle of the flame would cause sparks to fly what seemed a mile high, getting lost among the evening stars. And like so many of our ancestors going back hundreds of years, we sat there, huddled together, staring into the flame, inhaling the smoke till it burned our eyes. Of course, it left a lot of ashes in the street, but if a late night or early morning wind picked up, the ashes were magically all dispersed. A late evening rain was the worst, as it would douse the flame, causing the fire to smoke even more. As we got the call to come in to the house for the evening, I still remember sitting upstairs in my room doing homework, the windows open and the smell of that sweet leaf smoke filling my room, my clothes, and yes, my bed sheets. I think we always slept better on those nights when we burned the leaves, never thinking about the environment or ever worrying that one day there would be a ban on one of the true pleasures of the fall. Maybe that's why I always order my firewood from my guy about now to be sure we've got plenty of wood for the winter fireplace. And you know what? To this day, no matter how sweet the fire inside or how cold the weather outside, when we get those logs roaring in the family room, I always step out to the backyard deck and breathe in that sweet smell of burning wood. And if snow happens to be falling, all the better. I'm Stoney Richards, and that's this week's letter from home. Because no matter how far away you roam, there simply is no place like home. And now, another exciting episode of the Clintodashians. We join Bill and Hillary watching videos.
Oh, hey, Hill. Getting caught up on back episodes of The Good Wife? No, Bill, I'm watching a new movie about Jeb Bush.
Jeb Bush? What's it called?
Jeb Bush, the story of Zane Grey.
What?
Look, he's disappearing right in front of our eyes.
Come on in, Donald. It's open.
Oh, man, Bill, Hillary, the GOP should love this. Good to see you guys. They're loving this because this is huge. Listen to what I got. I am about to save this party from a disaster, and I'm going to take back that party, and I'm going to take back America.
Yeah, we heard, Donald.
What? Well, here, I got some debate questions. Look, Bill, take a look at this. Look it over. I want you to be the moderator. Let's do a little rehearsal here.
Just read them. Go.
Okay. Let's see. Donald, is it true that you cherish women and that Mexicans all love you?
I'm glad you asked me that because, you know, all the Mexican people love me and, you know, I cherish women. I've always been very, very good to them.
Come on. Read the next one. This is the best.
Okay, Donald, we understand that you know that Jeb Bush has no energy and that Ben Carson is able to sleep during these debates and Marco Rubio is, to use your words, a disaster.
That's exactly what I said. Finally, the media is being put to good use, quoting me.
Donald, do you think anybody will buy this? These are all softball questions slanted in your favor.
Oh, you notice. Good for you, because when I'm president, that's how my press conferences are going to go, and everybody's going to come because I'll hold them at Mar-a-Lago, and Ivanka is going to get caterers, and everybody is going to love it, and I'm going to tell American people exactly what I want to hear.
Sounds like a plan, Donald.
I knew you'd love it. Maybe I can work that into a question. Bill Clinton says I've got the best plan to take back America.
Donald, that's great. Isn't it time for your hair appointment, though?
Well, a hair appointment. At least it's not an appointment to the Supreme Court. Or is it? Find out in our next exciting episode of The Clintodashians.
The world is making headlines, maybe telling white lies. They wanna run the nation, the Clintodashians.
Let the dancing begin.
From Dan Mangan from CNBC, you heard the Taco Bell executive who was fired after allegedly drunkenly attacking an Uber driver, extremely remorseful now for the incident that was the subject of a viral video. Ousted fast food executive Benjamin Golden's mea culpa came the day after he was sued over the incident by Uber driver Edward Caban, and after California prosecutors lodged upgraded criminal charges against Golden. An attorney for Golden, who was allegedly intoxicated at the time of the incident, told CNBC.com that Golden doesn't even remember attacking Caban last Friday during a ride. Caban blasted Golden in the face with pepper spray after getting pummeled, as you may have seen in the video. He's definitely in the process of seeking counseling to understand why this happened, said Courtney Pilchman, lawyer for the 32-year-old Golden. Golden is hugely remorseful and very upset that he conducted himself in the way that he did, said Pilchman. He wants Mr. Caban to know how deeply remorseful he is. Mr. Golden recognizes that despite his level of intoxication, he should have never slapped Mr. Caban and is extremely remorseful for his actions. Mr. Golden accepts full responsibility for his actions and understands the consequences that may occur as a result. A dashboard camera video of the attack was posted earlier this week by Caban 23 on YouTube, of course, generating more than 2 million views, at least one of which was by Golden himself. He does not remember the event, Pilchman said. He didn't know exactly what he was arrested for. He has seen the video, but he has no recollection of it. His comment was that he doesn't even recognize the person in this video. So, wow, he was blasted. She confirmed that Golden was fired by Taco Bell after the company became aware of the incident. Pilchman said Golden is one of the most gentle, kind people that I have met, and this entire event is an anomaly of his life. She also said that despite the way he appears in the video relative to Caban, Golden is not a large man. He's like 5'9", and if he weighs 150 pounds, I'd be surprised, Pilchman said. Pilchman says she has reached out to Caban's lawyer to ask that the driver meet privately with Golden so that he can apologize. I don't know. What are you going to get? Like, settle out of court for some, you know, free meals at the restaurant? Oh, look at that. You got Taco Bell for the rest of your life. Pilchman says she reached out to Caban's lawyer to ask the driver to meet privately. She's not heard back yet. The meeting might be difficult. Caban reportedly is still so frightened of Golden that he's been sleeping next to a shotgun. No, I'm paranoid, Caban told KABC-TV Los Angeles. I keep waking up in the middle of the night. I think I hear something. I keep the shotgun next to the bed now, and I'm honestly afraid that he's going to come after me. Pilchman told CNBC that Caban's comment is so beyond ridiculous. I mean, I already beat him up. Caban's lawsuit, which seeks damages in excess of $25,000, was filed Tuesday in Orange County, California Superior Court. CNBC broke the news Monday that Golden, who had been leading Taco Bell's mobile commerce and innovation initiatives, lost his job after the arrest. Golden earlier had spent more than 7 years working for Taco Bell's parent, Yum! Brands. Given the behavior of the individual, it is clear that he can no longer work for us, Taco Bell said in a statement emailed to CNBC on Monday. We have also offered and encouraged him to seek professional help. The YouTube video posted by Caban, which was taken from a camera mounted on his Uber car's dashboard, shows Golden in the backseat Friday night at around 8 o'clock. The video reveals Caban repeatedly and unsuccessfully asking Golden for driving directions. Caban flips his camera around to show the inside of the car, and Golden topples over in the back seat with an audible thud as the driver makes a left turn. In the video, Caban eventually pulls over and orders Golden out of the car, saying he's too drunk to give Caban directions. The driver warns that he will call police if Golden doesn't get out. It's at that point that the confrontation becomes violent. Golden has been banned permanently from using Uber as a result of the incident, according to the company. Good move. Golden's LinkedIn account is no longer available, and his Twitter link was blocked from public site, but on a cached version of his Twitter page, he describes himself with a simple statement, sushi lover, bourbon drinker. The end. It is time now, ladies and gentlemen, for the evening sports dish, so let's get right to it, shall we? If ever there was a time to feel pain, it was this past Sunday as the Pittsburgh Steelers looked like they might be able to hand the hated Cincinnati Bengals their first loss of the season. And suddenly, Le'Veon Bell's knee buckled during a tackle on the sideline in front of the Steeler bench, and like that, although there were two full quarters to go, the game, and yes, most likely the season, were over. Even though the Steelers gave the game away with terrible penalties, and Ben, who was a savior, was bedeviled by some interceptions that sealed the Steelers' fate, and the Bengals simply came away with a pretty decisive win. Of course, the newspapers covered it by saying that Steelers still have a shot at the wild card, but looking at the game, seeing the rest of that schedule, I think at best, as I've said before, they're playing for another 8-8 season at best. I don't hate them for that. I just find the rest of the season so uninteresting. As we all know, in Pittsburgh, there are no other games beside the Steeler games. I've lived in other cities, L.A., when they had two teams, Washington, D.C., yes, Cleveland, and Lord help us, Detroit. When your team falls out of it, the talk turns to other teams. You find a second favorite. Not so Pittsburgh. When at least half of the most male Pittsburgh closets are filled with Steeler jerseys, hats, jackets, t-shirts, pants, and pajamas, who else you gonna root for? No, to be out of it 7 games in ain't good for fall in Pittsburgh. Thankfully, the Penguins have woken up and are playing well, but football remains the franchise here still, and not just football, as there is plenty of college, high school, and surrounding pro team football. That's not it. It's all about the Steelers. Now, the best case scenario is that the Bengals go on a long, and I mean at least a 4-game losing streak, and the Steelers get by Oakland this week and keep going from there. Add your here. But with Ben still a little shaky, Le'Veon Bell out for the season, Mike Tomlin is putting up a good front and raising the standard to a new standard. I'll stand with them, but from afar, because watching up close may be just a little too painful. And with that, I hope to Art Rooney, I'm dead wrong. I'm Stoney Richardson at Sports from My Vantage Point. Hi in the booth!
Let's get out there and hit some people!
And finally, my friends, the martini of the show, and this comes to us from Alex Brassetti at Complex.com. The Apple Store, as you probably know, is home to 700,000 apps, from airport directories to virtual Zippo lighters. But recently, Apple found some that, well, are not exactly condoned by the company. They're actually apps that allow the users to be spied upon. Some, many, created in, say it with me, class, China. Among them, there is the Obama trampoline. There is another one called Puff, which is an app you have on your phone, and you can look up a Japanese girl's skirt by blowing into your smartphone. these have been now discontinued. There's the video strip, the always popular video strip poker, and of course there's the pocket girlfriend, who never wants to talk about her feelings and says you don't need to go to the gym. You can always have that with you. Among others that were banned were the adult tennis boobs, yoga for dudes, and girls in bikinis doing downward dogs. Don't text. Well, there it is, ladies and gentlemen. Another half hour of your life completely wasted. I thank you so much for listening to the Stoney Richards Live from the Center podcast, always on iTunes, and of course, always available at StoneyRichards.com. We look forward to hearing from you on Twitter at Stoney Richards or at StoneyRichards.com. Our thanks to our musical director, Johnny Grieco. Have yourself a great week.